What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And John, sometimes as an anthology podcast, meaning we don't follow a story from beginning to end, we change our stories and our topics every time we come back to you. That makes us a little bit different. Some of the topics you may not have an interest in. Others you come back and say, oh, I'm so glad that they've dug into this one. And we've had some topics that I think generally appeal to everyone. We did one on retail and all the changes in retail. And as you recall, John, we saw a trend going back about a year and a half, 2 years ago, about people shopping online and the impact on these physical stores. That was tremendous. And in 2019, that process accelerated dramatically. So that's something everybody can relate to.
That's right. You know, we're kind of a magazine podcast, you could say.
Yeah, exactly.
We present a lot of different stuff each week, and most of it is I always learn something on our podcast.
Yeah, so. I do
but,
too.
But the shopping one, what really came to fruition this year? I mean, you look at the anchor stores, the malls are losing anchor stores faster than I think anybody thought they would be. And,
And let's look at it this way. The online marketers are getting more sophisticated, more convenient, cheaper. I mean, they figured it all out. I mean, you know, it's funny. The other day I ordered something online and it was just a small item. Just a small item. But it's so convenient just to get it this way. And I thought about the 18,000 people who, the minute I hit buy, had to do something to effectuate that sale.
Yeah,
oh,
right?
My goodness. For this, 14 of us have to run around, lose sleep, not be able to go home for a weekend. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Well, there are other topics, John, that aren't quite as lighthearted, though that is a serious topic in our society, but that we can't escape. And one of them, John, is death. And the fact that no one gets out of here alive, at least that's what I've read.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody.
Well, if you do know of someone, please refer them to us because, well, just like we did the one on a head transplant,
right,
we'd love
right.
to interview somebody who thinks that they can accomplish that. Well, we did look at anti-aging.
That's true. That's
and
true.
That was a fascinating topic. Well, I saw this article, Cremation Nation, Our New Way to Go by Annabelle Gurwitch. And this was in the Wall Street Journal. I found that fascinating. I started doing some reading about this because I had noticed myself, John, that, you know, people who I cared about, they would die. And instead of having the traditional funeral, I was told, well, there will be a memorial service a month or two down the road. And I started thinking about that, how these traditions about death and commemoration of life are changing so rapidly.
Well, I know part of it is cost, having gone, you know, having to had set up a number of funerals that it's really astronomical what a traditional funeral costs these days. I mean, it's very a lot of money. So
absolutely.
Cremation is a more inexpensive, and I think it's still just as nice, option.
Well, you know, the thing about cremation is that it gives you so many options, what you want to do with the ashes. I know there are many people who end up at the ocean, and they end up in favorite places that somebody might have visited, the national parks or whatever. I mean, there's a real change going on in the way we look at death and the way that we honor those who we loved. And I found the gentleman who I think is perhaps the leading expert in the country on this. Number one, John, he comes from a long line of cemetery managers. Now he's an academic at the University of Southern California. He's written the book, Is the Cemetery Dead? David Sloan. And you're going to learn so many things in this podcast. Like you always tell me, I learned so much about the way we are memorializing people today in the most unique and personalized ways. And we're using the internet. We're using roadside memorials. We're using our own bodies to symbolize someone who meant something to us. And we're not standing by the old traditions any longer. This is a quick changing pattern in American society. It really is.
Wow. You know, I never thought about that much. I've seen the roadside memorials, and I have seen people with tattoos, and I've even seen people with stickers on their cars and stuff.
Yeah, so, I've seen that too. Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't we get on to David Sloan, because we're going to talk about all of these things today on America Trends.
With me on the line is David Charles Sloan. He's a professor at the University of Southern California, and he's written a book called Is the Cemetery Dead? And, of course, I had no relation to this topic. I didn't grow up in a family of caretakers of cemeteries as you did. I was smitten with the movie My Girl about a funeral home director and his daughter and the life that they lived and the humanity that she grew to understand through life and death. So explain to us what it meant to you growing up in that type of environment.
So first, it was very typical for many families to hand jobs down to their sons or daughters. And this was particularly true in the death care industry. I'd known lots of sons of funeral directors or sons of cemeterians. And so growing up, in some sense, it was very normal, even though we grew up on the edge of a cemetery or in a cemetery, depending on which house we were living in. And my dad was born in a cemetery. And the family has been involved in cemeteries since the 1870s. And so it's now like fifth or sixth generation of doing this. And I have a brother who's a superintendent of a cemetery in Syracuse. The trick, though, is that I didn't really write about cemeteries because I grew up in them. I very much was affected by the way I lived, by growing up in a cemetery, in the sense that I got to see my dad deal with people in grief and in pain. And then I started working for him part-time in the summers and when I was 13. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see people in grief. One of my jobs for a couple of years during the summer was burying little babies. And most of the time you just did it. There was nobody around. But every once in a while there would be, the parents would come and watch you do it to make sure it was okay and to mourn. And so you get that opportunity to see people in pain, and you try and I think it did teach me some generosity. And I know it did my dad, who was a very generous and caring guy. The industry often gets a bad rap because of people like Jessica Mitford, who wrote a really great book, a very influential book, but in some sense was not interested in a very balanced view of the industry. And the industry has those people in it who exploit people and do things that are really awful. But there's also a lot of people out there who work hard to give people service at a moment that is a tragedy.
I know, aside from your scholarly interest and your background in your family, that you also went through the grieving process as you lost your wife and put her in her final resting place. What was that like, and how did that add to your understanding and appreciation for this industry?
It had two very important impacts upon me. The first was I was reminded by how much she was loved and how much I was loved by the people around me and by the people in the industry. You know, the people at Mount Auburn found a niche for her. My brother found a cremation urn for her. It was a reminder that you have this extended group of people who you've known for all your life in some cases, and in other cases, like 20 or 30 years. And it was amazing. The second reason it was important was that I watched as some of my friends rejected that idea of the cemetery. Some of the, particularly younger people like my students, looked at people who were working in the cemeteries as foreign. They had very little connection to them. They had been to very few funerals. They didn't see much purpose in funerals or cemeteries. And that made me really begin to think about the book that I would eventually write.
Well, the book is called Is the Cemetery Dead? And I hate to bury the lead, so to speak, and I hate to use the term bury in this conversation, but is the cemetery dead or is it evolving? What's happening?
The cemetery is not dead. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Americans, or in fact, it would be millions of Americans are very committed to the cemetery, particularly immigrant groups, deeply religious groups, Orthodox groups of all kinds are very committed to the idea of the cemetery and traditional conventional burial rites. And they follow the sort of classic, hospital to funeral home to church to cemetery line of institutions as their grandfathers or grandmothers did, or as their great-grandfather and grandmother did. Others, though, are beginning to question each piece of that institutional line. And that's why the question is raised. The question is not answered in the book as much as it's posed by the book. And that is that we're in a moment where many people, it's hard to tell how many, but many people are beginning to say, we want to have mom die at home. We want to have a memorial service, not in a church, but in a park, in a rec center at our home. We want to take care of the body. We want to wash the body. We want to prepare the body. We don't want it embalmed. We don't want it put in a hardwood casket. We don't want to put in a concrete vault. And we're either going to get it cremated, and then we're going to scatter the ashes or create an altar in our homes, or we're going to put it in a natural burial cemetery where they don't use pesticides and they don't allow concrete or steel vaults. And so you have this circumstance where both are happening at the same time, and in increasing numbers, they're both happening in the same place, because cemeteries have seen that natural burial is a market that is growing. And so a growing number of cemeteries, an increasing number of cemeteries, are actually putting in a section in their cemetery for natural burial, or they're starting small natural burial cemeteries in complement to their conventional cemetery. So the cemetery is not dead, but for a growing number of Americans, it's not as much a focal point of their burial rites.
Is this because of the secularization that's going on in our society? I think more people are becoming unaffiliated as it relates to a religious sect than ever before.
And I think that is an important part of it. I'm not sure it is the thing. One of the things about cultural change is pinpointing one thing is very difficult. I think secularization is important. I think environmental sensibilities are important. I think that the sort of desire to be more public in our grief is important. And I think personalization, whether it be a selfie or a gravestone, is important. I think all of those together are driving it rather than one piece of it. But it certainly is true that if you're not deeply embedded in an Orthodox Christian, Muslim, Jewish community, you're more likely to experiment with different types of dispositions. For instance, cremation is much lower in those communities than it is in other communities.
However, I'm really surprised, I'm of the Jewish faith, to see how many Jews want to be cremated, even though that's not part of our tradition.
And this is the thing that is changing, in my opinion, is that, and I don't want to call them super Orthodox, but really Orthodox people are committed to those conventions that have been there for the last 1,000 or 2,000 years. Then there's a whole group of people who have faith. I mean, it's not that they aren't Catholics or they're not Jewish or they're not Protestants, but they're more willing to accept that they want to control the process more, and they want the process to be more personal and less standardized, less conventional, less traditional. And most of them are turning to cremation. I mean, that's been the big change. When I was born in the 50s. When I was growing up in the 50s, somewhere between 2 and 4% of Americans were cremated. In 2015, more people were actually cremated than were buried and entombed. And so, I mean, it's now at roughly 50%, and the predictions are that it's going to go somewhere right around 70% before it begins to plateau over the next 10, 15 years. And so that's an enormous change in the way we think about all this. And certainly all of those pieces that I just said had something to do with it.
I saw one article in the Wall Street Journal, Cremation Nation, our new way to go. Other societies have gotten there before us, haven't they?
Oh, no. Yes. The Japanese, I think it's like 90%. Number of the European countries are over 60 or 70%. Cremation offers many positive things. I mean, there is a couple of negatives, but there are many positive things in that it's relatively inexpensive. It's not cheap, as people tend to think, but it's relatively inexpensive. It is pretty fast. I mean, you can get a cremation done fairly quickly, and you can control the body. You control the remains at that point. So you don't spend quite as much money. You can get the disposition pretty fast, and you then are in control. You can scatter, you can create an altar, you can inter. And many people still do inter the remains in niches or in burials. And so it's your choice then. And I think the choice, it becomes a very important part of this. But around the world, you know, the Chinese supposedly are going heavily into cremation after being largely a burial entombment culture for many, many years. And this has been true, you know, the English, you can go around pretty much around the world. I mean, the Buddhists were there earlier, the Indians, the South Asians were there earlier, but others are certainly picking it up.
I was reading that if every American went the route of the traditional Western burial, we're looking at needing an additional 130 square miles of burial ground by the mid-century. How much is that a consideration? Urban areas, of course, the density that they like to get, the ability to perhaps build apartments, and you have this continuing stream of revenue as opposed to a cemetery. How much is the economics involved in all of this?
Well, economics is always involved in every change, and it is here as well. First, so let's take it piece by piece. The first thing is space is clearly important. There's, most of the cemeteries in the United States were founded before 1950, a very significant percentage of them. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but it's got to be above 80%. And that means that many of them, and they started being created in the 17th century, many of them are full or they're filling up pretty rapidly. The way that cemeteries maintain themselves is through new burials, through new purchases. Only a small select few, like the Mount Auburns and the Spring Groves and the Forest Lawns here in L.A., have enough money in the bank in their endowment that they can just not sell. Most small cemeteries particularly don't have endowments that will allow them to really maintain their cemeteries. And so sales are very important. As they run out of land, it becomes even more important. At the same time, if you think about how you can change the way that you use land and the way you can use burials and you can use cremation, many cemeteries have found that they have more land than they think they do. And so what many cemeteries have done that are moving towards being full is they've gone to double depth or triple depth burials. And so they don't just have one person in a grave, they got two or three in a grave. Many have begun to figure out ways to go vertical. They're doing garden mausoleums, or they're doing garden mausoleums with niches. And then they're beginning to use their land. There's a number of cemeteries around the country that either are or are thinking about creating scattering grounds on the cemetery grounds in places where they can't develop. There's a ravine in one cemetery, and there's a open space in another cemetery where they just don't want it. They don't want to put burials there, but the scattering literally has no impact upon the nature except for actually enhancing it. And so there's ways to use space. Now, there's a number of people in my profession, urban planning, in my professional field, who have argued that places like Florida particularly where there is a lot of people who are still using that convention are pretty rapidly running out of space. And it's very difficult, or it has been very difficult, to start new cemeteries. It's not a land use which is welcomed by many people, by many neighbors. You also have to have a fairly substantial amount of land. That has begun to change a little bit in the last 20 years, and that's because of natural burial. Natural burial asks less of the land than conventional burial, because you don't have lawns in the same, you might have one lawn for services, but most of the area is left fairly wild, which means that if your neighbors are around, then they don't have the same kind of feeling that they're surrounded by a golf course. And then the second thing is the burials are not, there's no embalming, there's no vaults, there's no pesticides. So you don't have the significant toxins that people sometimes associate with cemeteries. And so a number of new natural burying grounds have been originated in the United States over the last 15 years. It's a tiny number compared to the 100,000 cemeteries that there are in the U.S., but it's still significant that people are allowing this, partially because environmentalists are now realizing that you can use a natural burying ground as a way to get money to actually save land. And so these are called conservation cemeteries. And there's a tiny number, it's probably no more than a handful. But what they are doing is they're buying land with the promise of paying it back in time by selling the ground for burials. And there's one of these in South Carolina, there's one in Georgia, there's maybe one in California coming. And so these are ways that you get the environmentalist and a private business together, and they provide a new idea of how to do this. But space is an issue that is driving people to think about new forms of cremation and new forms of disposition, like recomposition.
The book is called Is the Cemetery Dead? David Sloan is with us. I know that a lot is changing. You just talked about some things that I think are going to be new to a lot of the people listening. Also, I would imagine that the online element to what funeral homes are doing today, the way that we can remember a person, the way that we can eulogize them, that's been changing the entire industry as well.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, one of the big things that has happened to all of us is that we have found out somebody passed away on Facebook or another social media site. I mean, it used to be you got a phone call or you got a telegraph or somebody sent you a letter. It could take time to get to you. It was haphazard. Now, if you're friends with someone on Facebook, their friends put it up on Facebook and it's there immediately. And the mourning process begins immediately with the people who receive that information. It's impossible to know how many memorial pages there are on Facebook. They do not, unless you literally turn it into a memorial page, they don't count it as one. There are at least 35 million people who have died who have a Facebook page, which would make it the largest mourning site in, I think, history. And so that it's a dramatic change from, you know, we have to meet at the house, we got to do a phone tree, we got to figure out a way to talk to each other and meet at the bar to talk about the person. You now have a site to do this, and that leads to it cascades down. So you announce the funeral service on Facebook or another social media site. You begin to make plans around what you're going to do with the body and the people that care about the person. You begin to think about, can I put up a site that would keep that person's memory alive, not just at a social media site, but at a website. So people have begun to use what are known as virtual cemeteries that exist only in the digital world, where they put up photographs of people, and some of these you pay rent, some are free, but you can actually get, if you will, a lot in a virtual cemetery where you can have a person be memorialized, and then people can come to that site and they can light a candle or they can leave flowers, all digitally. And so you have that. And then you have what the cemeteries and particularly the funeral directors are beginning to do. Bring us a box of photographs of your grandmother and we'll turn it into a video. And we'll keep that video on our site so that you can look at it, or if you want to keep it private, or you can make it public and anyone can look at it. And so, again, and then you take it one step further, and we're going to have a service at a memorial, at a funeral home. Okay, we're going to stream the service, so you don't actually have to be at the service. If you're in Calgary and your loved one died in Montreal, you don't have to go to Montreal to be part of the service. You can just stream it and make comments on a bulletin board that's been set up. And so you have all of these things that are possible for people to do online that are connected to the way people pass away.
It's interesting because I think some of the best writing in newspapers are these obituaries where you learn so much about the remarkable lives that so many people who were unsuspecting because they never really brought a lot of attention to themselves, the way they lived. But now that obituary, as you say, can cross across the entire digital spectrum, can be utilized in so many ways, and now with the visual keepsakes that we have, can be shared in a very entertaining way, if you will. And I know that this has got to coincide with newspapers starting to charge for space because they're so desperate for ad revenue.
Well, I mean, I grew up in a household where the first thing you did in the morning, everyone did in the morning, was look at the obituary so you knew what my dad was going to be doing for the week. I've been reading obituaries since I was like five, and they are a remarkable. There's just a remarkable writing style, and when they're done beautifully, they're so evocative of that person and that person's place in the history of their family and the history of society. It's a remarkable thing. I worry about it because paid obituaries tend to be much more prosaic and short, and because they're charged by the word. So I worry that that only the wealthiest and most elite are going to get that kind of treatment as we move forward with fewer and fewer newspapers. On the other side, we have the growth of these memorial obituaries, these video obituaries, if you will. And those can be sometimes very cloying and sentimental and awful to my perspective. And then some of them are just beautiful. They're just remarkably gorgeous in the way that they present the person and in the person's complexity. And so I think we are in, again, as we are in many other things, we're in a sort of transitional space from a very conventional tradition that we've had for many, many years, and that is the newspaper obituary, to this new space. How do you find those new memorial videos? What's the linkages? All that stuff is not as clear right now as I think it will become as we move forward. But yes, I don't think we're going to stop remembering the people who died. I think we're going to just do it in multiple ways.
What about the memorializing, the street side shrines that are popping up in different places? How much of a trend is that?
It's an incredibly big change from when I was young. There are reports that a few people left a few bouquets of flowers on the grassy knoll in Dallas and at the place where James Dean's car hit the pole and those kinds of things. But the idea that we would have a Princess Diana with, 13 million pounds of, or 6 million pounds of flowers outside of Kensington Palace, or Prince and hundreds of bouquets, the purple bouquets outside of his place, So two things have happened. One, the roadside shrine or the memorial shrine has become pervasive. It's no longer connected to any immigrant groups or any religious groups. It's just about everybody. Second, it's not just about celebrities. It's not just about Princess Diana. It's not just about Prince or Michael Jackson. It's about everybody. And it's particularly connected to deaths that are related to trauma. So homicide or car crashes, where people die. Bicycle crashes have ghost bikes. Car crashes are usually roadside shrines. And what it all is about, from my perspective, is that we are willing, again, after a period of modern death that went from roughly the 1920s to the 1970s, we are willing again to be public in our grief. And this has many possible ways that we do this. It reminds me, and I'm sure it reminds many others who've paid attention to the Victorian age, of how death was very public in those days, when people would put photographs of dead babies on the mantle as a way to memorialize them, or they would have a clipping of the hair of someone who died and turn it into a art project that would be up on the dining room. That all disappears in the 20th century, or virtually disappears in the 20th century. It becomes much more visible, much less visible. And now we have the little decals on the backs of back windows of trucks and cars. We have memorial tattoos on the arms and legs and backs of people all over the country. And then most visibly, we have the roadside shrines, which there are thousands of these every year in the United States. And they don't last. They're ephemeral. They tend not to last for really long periods of time. Some people are very persistent and they keep them up for years. Most people, they do it immediately and it's gone within a few days or a few weeks. But it is a very public way to remind people of the ones that they've lost. And some people are upset about that because it doesn't fit into that modernist convention of keep your mourning private. But I think we're all becoming more used to it as we see it. I mean, the other day I was in a supermarket and, you know, the person taking my money, you know, their sleeve went up as they handed me my change. And there was a memorial to their, as it turned out, their uncle. And so this is something that's becoming part of our conversation, our visual culture. It's part of how we think about life and death. And it does go back to, you know, you start with the movie and then you think about Six Feet Under and you think about, you know, death was something which was very, very private, very sort of mysterious for decades in the United States. And again, you know, you can even talk, although I don't like doing this, talk about the zombies and the vampires and everybody else. I mean, these are all, you know, creatures of death that we're beginning to accept as part of the life of our society, the cultural life of our society. And I think that's an indicator of what's going on in general.
When you do look at it, we are living our lives out loud, and this is another expression of that. Given that we're the only species that knows that it is here and will die at some point, that would suggest that we should plan a good deal for this. Are we still reluctant? Do people still avoid that conversation, don't want to do wills and trusts, don't want to really share a lot of information with their children because it then brings death a little closer. Are we getting better at that?
I think we are getting better, but the stigma is very powerful. I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but it's still a great number of Americans do not do wills. One of the things that I hear about every once in a while when I give a book talk is someone comes up and talks about how they opened a will from their grandmother or their aunt, and they discovered that there were burial instructions in there that they did not follow because they didn't open the will soon enough. And so what I tell people when they ask me this is, you should write down what you want to have happen and give it to someone who will probably be a part of the decision making of what happens to you. And it is a good thing to have a conversation with your children or your relatives, your caregivers, your husbands, your wives, about what matters to you, what do you care about, and it doesn't have to be a super elaborate thing, I don't think, as much as it has to be, oh, I don't want to be cremated. You know, I grew up in a household where my mom had been a Catholic and changed to a Protestant. And my dad was a Protestant. And my dad, he was Episcopalian, and he wanted to be cremated, for decades. And my mom was completely opposed to cremation, just like she would not be cremated. So we, her children had to figure, their children had to figure out, okay, how do we get them, you know, in a place where she gets to have her full burial, body burial, and he gets cremated and gets put in it, you know. And so we figured it out. I mean, they're buried in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx in New York. And they're, one of them's cremated and one's not. But the only way we knew that is they told us. And if you don't tell people, then they're not going to know what you want. And if it matters to you, you should tell people. It's not that, don't feel like you can't do it. I think that it's an important thing to do. And I don't think people will be as freaked out now as they might have been 30 years ago.
In closing, what's the most innovative change that you've seen, say, in the last 10, 15 years in this industry?
I'm sorry, I can't do one. I got to do three. It's just me. The first is, and we've talked about these already, natural burial, I think, is a very big innovation that's now almost 25 years old. I think the online stuff is really important and is remarkably changing everything. And then the third would be this idea of bringing death back into the public. Those are all related. They're all connected, but they represent a remarkable change and also a continuation of the traditions in a new form. As you put it very early on in this conversation, it's really about evolution.
Well, a very lively discussion about whether the cemetery is dead. David Sloan, I can't thank you enough for being with us today on America Trends. Certainly something that all Americans need to think about at whatever age. And you have really shared with us some new information for so many.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you for asking.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.